And welcome into this week's edition of Pregame Warmup. I'm your host, Jason Madsen, alongside John Dove from NFLMocks.com. How are you doing tonight, John?
Doing good, doing good.
All right. And from In the Bleachers, Michael Felder. How are you doing tonight?
Doing fantastic, Jason.
Excellent. Now, we're going to start off tonight's show with a little discussion about Florida and their legal troubles. Now, over the past 5 to 6 years, they've had, I believe, 30 players arrested for multiple crimes. What seems to be the cause of this, Michael? What are they getting away with things because they're at Florida? Is this a leniency thing? Is it just a happenstance? What do you think the reasoning is behind this, Michael?
Well, they're not getting away with stuff. Well, I mean, they're getting arrested.
But yeah, they're obviously not getting away with it. But they're able to still play, and it's just kind of like a slap on the wrist deal. Why is that?
I don't know if I buy the slap on the wrist thing, but what I do say is I think that the people that are trying to make this an institutional issue don't understand that no one hopes their kids get arrested, or no one is okay with their kids getting arrested. And I guess one of the things for me is when I start thinking about an institutional issue or a problem and breeding a climate of disrespect or disregard for the law, what I look at is what kids are arrested for. And there's no pattern to these arrests. And you look at other places, whether it was Tennessee, where a bunch of players got into a fight, a bunch of players participated in an armed robbery, or you look at Georgia, where they've had, I think, 3 or 4 guys get popped for some sort of drinking and driving violations in the last, I want to say the last year. I mean, those things kind of lead to trends, in my opinion. But I look at this, it's a bunch of guys that get arrested. Kids make bad decisions. When I was in school, we had a bunch of guys get arrested. I wasn't one of them. And it wasn't Coach Bunning got on the horn. He banned us from bars. He told us not to go here, don't go there. He tried to drug test kids more. And fact is, kids get in trouble. They make bad decisions. They're 21. When you're dealing with 17 to 22 year old kids, not excusing it, but the fact is that age of guys makes stupid decisions. And I think we're looking at a rash of stupid decisions that's no different than the guys that get arrested at frat houses, or the guys that get arrested, you know, in the dorm.
Right.
They get arrested. College kids get arrested for doing dumb things.
What do you have to add about this, John?
The one thing I like to add to it is, Look at how Florida recruits. They recruit all over the country. So when I went to college, I stayed in state. It wasn't very far from home, but it was the first time away from my parents, out on my own. And you're just going to do what you feel is best. No one telling you not to do this, not to do that. Here's kids going sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6 states over. Just the distance, right, and the freedom. They're going to make mistakes. You're going to go out there. You think you know what's right. And, you know, sometimes you play follow the leader, things like that. I mean, I don't think it's a situation that happened just in Florida. I know for a fact that there's been a lot of arrests up in Penn State over the last couple of years. And many, many people will tell you that Paterno runs a very clean program up there. He's not going out specifically looking for people that are questionable characters. It just happens. You're, like Michael said, you're 18, 17 years old, first time out on your own.
Definitely.
It's a very good opportunity to get in trouble.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember when I went to college, it's kind of like you're free and you can do whatever you want to. You don't have to be home at a certain time. You don't have anybody telling you what to do. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely understand what you guys are talking about here. I just – 30 arrests in 5 years, is that a little extravagant, Michael? I mean
– I think it's a lot, but at the same time, you know, you got to pull – I don't know what other people's numbers are. And I don't know what the standard is for a lot of people. I know that Miami brags about how they haven't had anyone arrested in the last 3 seasons. But at the same time, I'm not, you know, I don't know the way that police are. I know I've heard multiple times people in Athens complain about the Clark County police. And I don't know if Gainesville police are the same way. I don't know if they're out to get folks. John, I'm sure you heard at Penn State when they had that rash of arrests, people were saying, why are they going so hard against the football players? I know that I remember reading that. I think to the effect that Matt Millen was on Outside the Lines, and he mentioned, you know, you get in a fight. It used to be you'd get in a fight, and, you know, they'd take you home and tell you don't do that. But now everybody's out looking for a story. So I think that there's an element of – I think there's multiple things working. Kids make bad decisions, yes. It's no excuse. The decisions are still wrong. But at the same time, I think there's also an element – there's a lot more – hypersensitivity to it now and things that would have got brushed under the rug. I remember talking to guys that played at Carolina before and hearing the things that they did when they were in school compared to the stuff that we did when we were in school, it's worlds apart. They did worse things than we've ever done, but they didn't get arrested on it. There was just a culture of protecting the athletes. And I think now there's a little bit of there's an element of picking guys off. And not to say it's right or wrong, but just that's what it is. And these kids got to be a lot more careful because they are in a lot larger spotlight than the kids that are that played, 15, 20, 25 years ago.
I got you. We'll stick with the ACC. Why don't we jump into our conference breakdowns right now? We'll jump in and we'll talk about North Carolina. A couple of their defensive backs, Burney and Williams, they've received their suspensions, and they're required to, I believe, repay the money and or the benefits that were given their way. Michael, what was that a fair punishment on their part?
I like the punishment of Deontay Williams runs pretty concurrent with what I've seen from the NCAA in terms of the 4-game suspension being what they levy for a $1,000 or more payment or a legal benefit. I don't know about the Kendrick Burney decision was kind of odd to me
He got six games,
because
right?
exactly a 6-game suspension, which is not anything in their books, which they either found something that they weren't suspecting or they either found something they didn't like, that they found to be egregious and that's why they levied the extra game, or they want to force a little bit more of an investigation. So it'll be interesting to watch. I think though Burney should probably win the appeal barring any other sort of infractions. So we'll see what happens. I'm not too upset with the suspensions being levied though. Even if it stands at six, it happens, you move on and no big deal.
Now we'll stick with North Carolina here. What do you think their outcome is their with their game when they head to Rutgers? What are their
I
chances of
think
winning that game?
this is a game that the Tar Heels have to win. I expect them to win. They're a good football team. Still, they've played very well without the even without their full
Their core, basically.
they're without the core. They've played relatively well, and I think that these guys they'll finally get a win because they've got a group of guys that are finally starting to come together, and they're not playing a wacky offense. They're not playing a team with superior talent in LSU. So finally, we've got a team that North Carolina, not only are they equal to, but they're better than, and they don't have to prepare for a crazy offense. So I think this is a game the Tar Heels get their first win in.
Excellent, excellent. Now, John, over to you. We're talking about Virginia Tech, and they traveled up to Boston College for a tough conference game. What are the keys to winning for each team?
Boston College needs to protect the ball, and they need to develop some sort of a passing game. Virginia Tech is going to stack the box, and they're going to try to stop the run. And Boston College needs to find a way to get the ball downfield, stretch the defense a little bit. For Virginia Tech, they have the talent. Everyone knows that. They just need to play better. They also need to run the ball. Their offense for years has been based on the running game. If they get that running game going, that'll open up the passing game. It's kind of the same keys for each team. It's whatever team actually is effective on the field in their game plan.
Now, what do you think's been wrong with Virginia Tech this year? I mean, they've struggled in each of their games. Even last week against East Carolina, they put up a ton of points. What's been going on with the Virginia Tech this year?
From what I see, it is the running game. They're not able to get the running game going as much as they would like. The first game against Boise State, they weren't able to do that. I mean, I think Tyrod Taylor looked pretty good at times in that Boise State game, but I think there was too much on his shoulders. And just moving forward, that's the staple of that team. I think they're confused and disoriented when they're unable to establish the running game, especially against, James Madison or even Boise State. They went into that game thinking they were going to dominate the line and be able to run all over them. And when they weren't able to, I think maybe they were stunned a little bit. And I think that is what's led to this slow start for Virginia Tech.
All right. Jumping over to the Big East now. We'll stick with you, John. There's a huge game this weekend, West Virginia and LSU matchup. The West Virginia offense looked pretty good last week. The LSU defense has been very impressive this year. Who wins this game and why, John?
I'm going with West Virginia. I think that might be an upset in many people's mind. I think Geno Smith has looked very good the last couple weeks, albeit against weaker defenses. But he's been efficient. We know he can run with his feet, but he is developing into a nice pocket passer. They have some nice weapons in Noel Devine and Jock Sanders, and I'm just not that impressed with LSU's offense. I don't think that they're going to be able to put up enough points. I know their defense is very good. It's going to be Patrick Peterson out there trying to shut down the receivers, maybe force a turnover or two. But my question is, where's Terrence Tolliver been this year? I think he has 9 catches for like 80 yards.
Yeah,
that's his season so far. At NFL Mocks, we had him in our top 32 in the big board just because of his size. And I mean, going into it, I was aware, I very suspicious of Jordan Jefferson. He hasn't really proven much. I was still high on him, but he's just disappeared completely. And that offense needs to do something if they hope to win this game. I think West Virginia is, they're confident right now, and I know it's a road game at LSU at night. That stadium is going to be crazy, but I think they can overcome those odds and pull out a big victory for the Big East.
Now, just real quick, over to you, Michael. What are your thoughts on the LSU defense matching up with the West Virginia offense?
I think that West Virginia is going to walk into a house of horrors. I mean, Death Valley at night, and that's the stuff that legends are made of. I mean, that place is it's a house of horrors for non-conference opponents at night. You don't win there. The SEC teams have seen some success. Florida won there recently, but you don't go into Death Valley and get a win. It's just, especially now with a young quarterback who's inexperienced in big moments like that, with a team that's still not putting it together on defense, you know, for an entire game. I just don't see them walking out of here with a win. I don't see any way they do.
Okay. We'll stick with you, Michael. Does Cincinnati have a chance against Oklahoma this week? I mean, Oklahoma's Oklahoma, every week it seems like they play to their competition. Do you see any way that happens? I mean, is that Cincinnati, any way that happens at all?
No, I don't. I think a lot of folks are mistaken Oklahoma's vulnerability for Oklahoma struggling with the triple option. They struggle with the triple option against Utah State. They struggle with the triple option against Air Force. They blew the doors off Florida State in a more conventional offense. Unless Cincinnati's going to run Zach Kolaris out there and have him run the triple option, I think that they're going to get their doors blown off. Oklahoma's too big, too fast, too strong.
That's what I was going to ask you, if my Mizzou Tigers should start running the triple option. Maybe we have a chance on homecoming. We'll stick with you, Michael. Big Ten now. Some people are saying Wisconsin's overrated. What do you think about that? I mean, they struggled. They struggled last week against the Sun Devils, a team that, when we talked about it last week, you thought that they were, that wasn't going to be a game, and it turned out to be a block extra point.
I don't think they're as good as we thought they were. I think they still got some kinks to work out. I don't think they're as talented as some of the other teams in the country, and so that's where they're going to struggle at. And maybe we'll find out that Arizona State's better than we thought. But as it stands right now, I think Wisconsin's a little bit overrated, and they've got a lot of work to do to prove to me that they're a quality ball club, at least in the quality of a team that can win the Big Ten.
What is it about them? I mean, last year they had a great running game, a great offensive line, the most accurate quarterback in college football last year. Is it their defense? Are they just not doing what they do on offense? What is it about them this year?
I think they're really one dimensional to the point where I think Wisconsin relies so much on the run game to open up the pass game, and they don't have a lot of they don't adjust very well at all. So if you can get them bottled up early, or you cause them trouble, you confuse them, they don't have anything else to go to. Most teams, you stop the run, they'll try to pass until the run game opens up. And I don't think that these guys have the ability to say, oh, well, man, John Clay's not, you know, picking up 5 a clip. What do we do next? We need to open this thing up. I think they've got one way to play football, and when you've got one way, it's a lot easier for teams to stop you.
Do you think Toon didn't play last week, did he, with his turf toe?
I don't think he played.
So that, I mean, maybe when he comes back, that could be a thing too. John, what do you have to add to the Wisconsin debate here?
Kind of just going off what Michael was saying, this is their offense. Every year they do the same thing. They run the ball, they pound it out, and when they have a strong offensive line and a good running back, they're successful. They're not going to go into a game. It's going to be rare for them to go into a game and blow out any team. They make a mistake here or there. It's going to be a close game, but they find ways to pull out these close games. When you look at their rating, their ranking, they're number 11, I think, right now. I think that's where they look overrated. But I don't know. I mean, me personally, I don't feel that they were ever the 11th best team in the country. So for me, they're not overrated because I didn't have them rated that high. But I guess maybe in the country aspect of it, the way everyone else sees them, they might be a little overrated.
Gotcha.
And yeah, last week, both of their starting receivers were out of the game.
It was both of them. I knew Tune was out with the turf toe. I wasn't sure, though. And we'll just go back to you, John. Last week, Arizona had a blocked punt that set up a quick score, an interception return for a touchdown, and a kick return for a touchdown. And this was all like within a five-minute period. Was that game a fluke? Should Iowa, if those three things didn't happen, I mean, obviously you can't take that back, but if it was just a football game where, you know, they go head-to-head, would Iowa have walked away with that game?
I think Iowa is the stronger team all around, but they came in there, they executed poorly, and that's what hurt them. Once they got down early, they were out of their game plan. They weren't able to run and grind it out. I think Stanzi threw the ball 33 times, and while he's an inconsistent performer, when you throw 33 times and you're inconsistent, you're going to have turnovers, you're not going to convert when you need to. I mean, that's the way the game went. They just didn't go in and they didn't execute. I think Arizona is a very good team. We talked about it last week that their offense is very powerful. Their defense is looking better week in and week out. It was just a good game by Arizona. I don't think it was a fluke. If you don't execute, you don't win. One thing I do want to touch on this, maybe I want to get some of your opinions. If you watched the game, did you see Mike Stoops on the sideline? I thought that, I don't know, I think he was acting like he never coached in a big game before. And he may be the next coach leaving the sideline because of a health issue. I think every single play he was screaming, yelling, jumping. To me, I was like, I felt embarrassed for him at one point. I know he's an intense guy. Coaches got to be intense, but I think he took it to a point where I've never seen before. I don't know if you guys got to look at it or notice that as well. But I couldn't keep my eyes off him on the sideline.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I was passed out from my bachelor party while this game was going on, waiting for certain entertainment to arrive, but no, I did not get to see it. It's on my DVR. I will watch it eventually, probably tonight or tomorrow, but yeah, I didn't get to see it. I don't know. Did you notice that at all, Michael?
I noticed a little bit of kind of the frantic nature of the coaching staff, but I thought that overall, I didn't think Iowa panicked too much. I thought that as a whole, they kind of pulled themselves together and went back out there, fought and made Arizona had to pull that game out in the end. And while they might have got the lead kind of in a, I don't want to call it a fluke. They got the lead in a way that was kind of unconventional. I think that they showed that, hey, you know, we're tough kids. We can pull this game out, you know, win it the real way, sort of the way that Auburn showed they could win it. Well, actually kind of the way that Auburn battled back. Yep. Arizona did that, but they got the win at the end of the game.
Excellent. Now, we'll go back to you, John. Does Temple, you're the Penn State guy here. Does Temple hang with Penn State this year? Or, yeah, I guess this week in Beaver Stadium?
I think it's going to be closer than a lot of people imagine. Although getting a lot of hype that Temple's going to stay close in this game. Temple's defense is what's going to keep them close. Penn State going with the freshman quarterback. He's improving, but he's still turning the ball over a lot. And anytime you turn the ball over, it's going to be a tough game for you. I just mentioned it with the way Iowa turned it over a couple times. It's the same thing's going to happen, I think, in this Temple-Penn State game. I just don't think Temple's offense is efficient enough, is high-powered enough to put up enough points to stay with Penn State. I think if Penn State can just avoid turnovers, it'll be an easy win for them. But if you see a couple turnovers, I think it'll be close maybe to the half, third quarter, but then Penn State will pull away in the fourth.
Okay. Damn. What do you expect out of Bernard Pierce this week? He had a pretty damn good game last week.
Yeah, and Penn State's run defense hasn't looked very good this year so far. I know they've only played two, you know, Youngstown State and last week against Kent State. They didn't play very good competition, but you know there were some big holes in that Alabama game. So I expect them to have a decent day. I'm thinking maybe around 80 yards.
Okay. All right, and just everyone here at the pregame warm-up crew, we'd like to send some well wishes to Michigan State head coach Mark D'Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but obviously we'd like to see him back on the sideline here very soon. So for a speedy recovery coach.
Absolutely.
Now to the Big 12, Michael, did Nebraska validate their high ranking by they absolutely destroyed Washington and Seattle. Did they validate that? What are they this week? Number four? Number five?
Yeah, no, this is a good football team. They are a really good team. They showed a lot to me because they can play. They go get it. And they've got a quarterback. This was the issue that we all had with them. How are they going to score points? How are they going to score points? We know their defense will be good, but how are they going to score points? Hey, they've got a quarterback that can play his butt off, and it looks like they're going to be okay. And if they're going to score the football and play defense the way they've been playing, Nebraska's got a chance to go very far.
I agree, and I hate to say that as a Mizzou fan, but seriously, I mean, Taylor Martinez, we put him this week in the pregame warm-up Heisman watch. He's number five on our list as a freshman. I've heard from their offensive coordinator, Watson, that he can throw the ball just as good as he can run it. He just hasn't had to yet this year. So I'm kind of anxious to see when a team shuts down the run to see what he can do when he has to throw the ball. But I've been very impressed with the Nebraska Cornhuskers, no doubt. And we'll stick with you here, Michael. I don't know if you've ever had an offensive coordinator that was like this, that was like a former quarterback or quarterback coach. But Mizzou, they're not running the ball when they should. They could have ran the ball down the throat of San Diego State last week, but they only ran that, I believe, 11 times. Does that have to do with Coach Yost being their offensive coordinator, Coach Yost being a former quarterback coach, or is there something else behind the scenes that we're not noticing?
Well, you know, the running back's out, but like you said, they had chances to run the football. I think you're kind of right. I think the one place where you notice this the most is going to be a South Carolina school that should have been running the ball for, you know, a half decade with Steve Spurrier, but they still tried to pass. And it takes guys a while to break out of what they're comfortable doing or the way they think is right. And whether it's a coach not wanting to go to a spread type offense. We see another example, Jim Tressel. Even though Terrell Pryor spreading it out, letting him kind of run a little bit of option games and stuff might be a little bit more effective for them, he sticks to what he knows. And I think what you're seeing here is you're seeing Yost stick to what he knows, and that's throwing the football and spreading guys out and trying to be effective that way instead of taking what they give you.
Yeah, I agree. And it's really frustrating as a fan. I'm sure you guys have both dealt with this when you want a coach to do something else. You obviously are right because you're sitting on your couch watching the game. You're obviously right. But when you only run the ball 11 times against San Diego State and you were averaging, I think you averaged 9 yards a carry or something like that in the game, you need to run the ball a little bit more. John, over to you. One of your favorites here, K-State running back Daniel Thomas. Is he a Heisman candidate this year?
He really has to continue what he's doing and maybe step it up here and there, have big games when they play big games.
Now, real quick to interrupt you, do you think he has to continue or both him and K-State have to continue what they're doing?
It's a combo. You got it. Unfortunately, you really need to be on a team that gets a lot of national attention, uh-huh, in my opinion, to get a real serious look for Heisman candidate for the Heisman. I mean, look at right now where we're sitting at Denard Robinson, Michigan, national school. Right. They're looking good so far. Ryan Mallett, Arkansas. Everyone knew going in he was going to have a good year. He's just a high-profile player. They're playing very well in the SEC. Prior Ohio State, you know, he's been getting attention since he took an extra long time deciding where he was going to college. These are the people that are getting most of the attention now. Is he deserving? I don't know. I want to see him perform against some tougher defenses. Like you said, I like him. I think he's going to be a good NFL player. I think he's a good college player. But he's really going to need to shine and continue what he's doing and maybe have a couple big games to actually get in consideration for the award.
Well, here in a couple weeks, they play Nebraska.
And that's going to be his there's his shot right there.
That's what I'm saying. Like if he leads K-State to a victory and he puts up 175 yards and two scores, he's right there on the scene, Heisman candidate instantly. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, he's in the discussion. I think he's even getting small discussions now. Yeah. It's just some people, you know, Denard Robinson is looking amazing. Mallett is looking. He's getting overshadowed by some of the bigger name players, I think.
Definitely. And what's going on with Texas A&M quarterback Jared Johnson? Is it his surgery that he had in the offseason? Is he just was he just buying into his hype, John? I mean, what's going on with him?
I thought he was a nice player. I never thought going into this season, everyone was talking how he was going to be great. I mean, he's good. He's electrifying. But I never was that high on him as some were. But I do think the shoulder injury has a lot to do where he's at now. Over the summer, they had him on like a pitch count where he'd only throw the ball less than 100 times a day. And you need reps. No matter how long you've been playing, you need reps. You need to continue to grow. And I think him not being able to do that stunted his growth, and he's still trying to catch up.
All right. So we'll keep our eye on him. Maybe he turns around here during Big 12 season. We'll skip over to the Conference USA, Michael. The Houston Cougars suffered a huge loss to UCLA, not only in the game, but they lost their star quarterback, Case Keenum, I believe for the season, with a torn ACL, and then they lose the backup. How does that change the Cougars this year? Are they going to become lean heavily on the run this year? What's going on with them?
They're going to fall apart. I mean, they really are. They're going to fall apart. This team, we saw them get blown out by UCLA, 31-13. I don't know what they're going to do. They've lost their quarterback. They've lost two quarterbacks, not just one.
Yeah, well, they have the backup in there, or that highly recruited, touted recruit, right? What's his name? Broadway? Terrence Broadway?
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be pretty good, but...
But he's...
He's not Case Keenum.
Exactly. He's not Case Keenum. He's a kid. And so, you mean, they're in trouble. And this is a team that folks were expecting to have a very, very good year. And it's not going to happen. And they already lost a UCLA team that everybody kind of penciled them in for a win on. So these guys, I mean, they're going to start a true freshman out there at quarterback. They're going to take their lumps, and they're going to have to hope that someone's going to have to hope that, you know, somebody can keep them afloat, because they're going to take their knocks. They lost their running back preseason. They lost their two quarterbacks. They're in trouble on offense.
Oh, definitely. And that's their bread and butter. So we'll keep an eye on that, see how Broadway does as a true freshman. We'll stick with you here, Michael. How impressed should we be with Southern Miss beating Kansas at home?
I mean, they're a good football team. I'm not surprised that they beat them. I absolutely expected them to win that football game, to be honest. So I don't know that impressed is a word that I would use, because I think that they did their job. I think you're talking about a team that really we're not going to know much about them until they get deep into their conference schedule and they start playing Tulsas and Houstons and East Carolinas.
Okay. Now, we'll stick with the U.S. Conference USA here. What do you expect out of SMU, the Mustangs, for the rest of the season, John? Can they win the Conference USA, at least the West Division?
Keenum going down opens things up in that division. It does, and SMU has a very good chance. They're going to score a lot of points. And when you can score points, I mean, I'm a big defensive guy. I like defense, but June Jones has shown he can put up a lot of points and win games, and they have an opportunity. They got to continue playing well and continuing the win.
Okay. Then we'll jump over to the Mountain West Conference. We'll stick with you, John. I mean, Oklahoma didn't stand a chance to stop the Air Force ground attack. We've already kind of touched on this with Michael with the triple option. Who's going to be able to stop them in the Mountain West this year?
The first thing that I looked at was the October 23rd matchup against TCU. That's going to be a good game when TCU has a good defense. They always game plan well. I think that's going to be a good game. It doesn't mean they're going to stop the Air Force ground attack. They just may slow it down. But that's going to be an interesting game to watch, I think.
Well, they probably won't be able to stop TCU exactly. So that's something. Okay. And, I mean, we'll go right into TCU. TCU and Utah, they just keep winning. Who has the upper hand in that battle for the race for the BCS this year?
I think TCU is a better football team, but I think Utah getting them at home, having a little chip on their shoulder, revenge factor, gives Utah sort of an edge in my book. I like Utah to win that division, but TCU obviously is a better football team.
Utah was your pick to go to the Rose Bowl, right, this year?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll see how that goes. And San Diego State, did they find another star running back in Ronnie Hillman, or is the Mizzou defense just that bad?
Combination of both, I think.
Did you see that last run, the 95-yarder? I think three Mizzou guys had him wrapped up. And
yeah.
Oh, it was bad. It was very bad. All right. We'll keep an eye on Ronnie Hillman, too. He's just a freshman this year.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go to you, John, for the we'll head down to the MAC, and we'll go to you, John. Is Temple too good for the MAC? Should they be in a conference like the Big East or Conference USA?
They're not too good for the MAC. Not yet. They got to continue to play well, and this is maybe their second good season in a row. Last year they were all right. They're continuing to build. Golden is building a good program down there, but he's not going to stay in Temple. What happens when he moves on? This team's going to fall off the face of the earth. You move them over to the Big East or Conference USA, that they can really struggle in the Big East. And not that the competition is much different, but Pitt's a good team in the Big East. There's several teams there that would really outmatch this Temple team. I think if Golden sticks around, or they can find a nice replacement when he does move on, maybe down the road, but they need to put a bunch of good seasons together.
Okay. I was kind of thinking the same thing too, but mm-hmm. if they continue this dominance, they should definitely.
Yeah. I mean, there's good athletes in the Philadelphia area. They can get people from Jersey and stuff. There's a lack of talent to come to Temple and play. It's just, they got to continue to recruit. They have a lot of big schools in their backyard that they're going to have to take over to win these recruiting battles.
Okay.
And, you know, having Golden's a start, but if you lose him, that's really going to hurt that team.
All right. And we'll go out to the Pac-10 with you, John. Oregon gets a minor challenge against Arizona State. We're not really sure how good Arizona State is this year. What do the Sun Devils need to do to win this game against the powerhouse in Oregon?
They got to control the ball and score points. I don't see them being able to score enough points to keep up with Oregon at this point. It's going to be – that offense is so fast up and down the field. They can put points on the board from anywhere. And it's going to be a real challenge for Arizona State to keep up with them. They just need to control the ball and score just about in every possession.
All right. And over to you now, Michael. We saw Nevada put up a ton of points against the Cal defense last week. It was a shootout like we talked about. And fresh off their bid against Iowa, Arizona heads to Cal. Are they head to Cal, or is it at Arizona?
The game is actually in Arizona,
okay.
Tucson.
All right. So with the game being in Arizona, are they just going to outscore Cal, or how will they beat them?
I think they're just going to beat them down. They play pretty good defense, and the guys are good to go. I'm not going to be surprised if they beat them pretty badly. Cal's an odd team. Kevin Riley's a guy that I thought would be better than he is. He was supposed to be another one of Jeff Tefford's golden boys, and he never materialized. He's got serious issues in terms of his reads, his decision making. He double clutches, and I mean it's tough to watch him play. It's almost painful for a kid that had a ton of potential coming in, who's dealt with so many injury issues, to watch him play. So I think I think this is a game that they absolutely roll in. I think Arizona's just a more sound, put together football team.
All right, and real quick, UCLA wins at Texas if they do what, Michael?
I pray.
Find a new quarterback.
They lock the locker room door for Texas.
I mean, I know they looked impressive beating Houston with a backup. With a backup quarterback, but I mean this. I think this game actually keeps it close, but not because UCLA is any good, but they keep it close because Texas got some issues on offense, on the offensive line, and the running back area that they're still trying to work out, and
all right.
That's going to be what keeps this game close. Texas trying to find a way to run the football, not UCLA playing any sort of fantastic game.
Okay, and we started a new conference, I guess, this week, or we're going to talk about the independent teams mm-hmm. for the first time this week. Notre Dame plays host to Stanford this weekend. How are they going to stop superstar Andrew Luck at Stanford, John? What do you think they have to do to stop him?
They got to get a ton of pressure on him and shut down the running game. Even with that, I don't think they really have a shot at shutting him down. I don't think it's going to be a very close game. I'm not very high on Notre Dame's defense. I know they're finally getting a lot of their secondary back from injury, but it's still going to take time for them to get together and play up to their potential. They got a lot of work they got to do, and I don't think they're going to have a shot at stopping Luck.
All right, and we'll just stick with you here, John. We've kind of discussed the triple option, how difficult it is to defend. Army runs the triple option. They're playing Duke this week. How did the Dukies stop the triple option, or did they just outscore them on the offensive side of the ball?
I guess I'm Mr. Independent today.
Yes, you are.
Yeah,
call you Beyonce.
Oh, man. I don't know if they really could stop it. Duke's defense isn't very good. They got some athletes here and there. It's just going to be a shootout. They're just going to try to outscore each other. I don't know if they really have – they don't really have the talent to shut down that the triple option for Army.
All right, so Army takes that game, in your opinion?
I think – I think Duke can win.
Oh, okay.
I just think it's going to be a shootout. I don't think they're going to shut down the Army offense.
I got you.
I think Duke is the better team and will come out with a victory. But I don't think they're going to be able to really shut down that triple option.
All right. And now down to the SEC. Michael, your Bulldogs, are they going to get the – your Georgia Bulldogs, excuse me, are they going to get their season back on track? I'm having trouble talking. I'm thinking about Beyonce, I guess. Well, Georgia –
That'll do it.
Yeah. The Georgia Bulldogs, they head to Mississippi State this season – or this week. Are they going to get their season back on track?
They have to. If they lose this game, they might as well, hang it up. But I think they get it back on track. They're a better football team than Mississippi State. If they can hang on and win this ball game, beat Colorado, they get AJ Green back, and they'll be good to go from there on. But I think that this is a squad that definitely needs this game really bad.
Now, if they lose this, is Mark Richt, like, he might be on the hot seat already.
No.
Okay.
No. I hear it all the time, and I don't think Rick's seat. And if this is, I think this is the difference. All this pressure for Rick being on the hot seat it's coming from a national perspective, from folks that aren't Georgia people.
Gotcha.
It's not the same. It's not the same internal pressure that other coaches have. Folks at Georgia are happy with Mark Richt. They like Coach Richt. I mean, he's one of the most beloved because they understand where they could be. He's averaging 9 wins a season for a team that used to average 7.5 wins, just before they hired him. So they understand, hey, we're doing all right. Are they upset that they don't beat Florida more? Absolutely. And they put pressure on him for that.
Right.
Are they upset that they haven't won an SEC title since 2002? Absolutely. They're upset about that. But they went to the Sugar Bowl in 2008. This is a football team that's had obviously the number one draft pick in Matthew Stafford. They're not that upset. And you throw that in with the fact that one, Rick doesn't have his best player, one of the best players possibly in Georgia history, in AJ Green.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have their best player. They for 4 games, they've got a freshman quarterback and they've got a brand new defensive coordinator. There's no way that Rick's on the hot seat because with all that transition. If Willie Martinez had stayed there, I think then you talk about Rick being fired because he decided not to fire Willie Martinez. But Rick fired Martinez, brought in a new defensive coordinator. That buys him at least a year. Same thing with the redshirt freshman quarterback. I think all those things combined, I'm not worried about Rick after this season.
Okay. We'll stick with you here too, Michael. I mean, South Carolina, Auburn play this weekend. What are some keys to each team winning that game?
Run the football.
Both teams.
Both teams got to run the football. Okay. I think Lattimore versus Dyer, the two sensational freshman running backs. They were ranked 1 and 2 in recruiting in the country, depending on who you looked at. These guys can run the football, and whoever wins the battle of running the football is going to be who wins this football game. Cam Newton, obviously, you throw that in. He's got a little bit of an edge. Gives Auburn an edge when it comes to running the football because he is so dangerous with his legs. But I think that this is a game that's really the definition of a toss-up. Auburn and South Carolina, two very equally matched teams. I think that South Carolina's got a better defense, but I think by that same token, Auburn's offense is a little bit more explosive.
All right. Excellent. We'll talk about more. We'll talk more about that game in the pregame warm-up pick'em section too. So we'll break that down a little bit. Down to you, John. Sticking with the SEC, Alabama heads to Fayetteville for a pretty big game this weekend. Mallett comes out firing. Do the Hogs take this game, or do you see it a different way?
This is a tough call here. If Mallett has to come out firing, not turn the ball over once, and pray that his defense can stop somebody for them to beat Alabama. Alabama is going to run the ball right down their throat, and they're going to score at will. They're going to control the clock, and if Mallett comes on the field, makes one mistake, that could be the game. That's what can determine the game, and that's one mistake. And that's that. I just think the Arkansas defense isn't good enough to keep Alabama out of the end zone. But over at NFL Mocks, we did an article recent just this week about how this is a very big opportunity for Ryan Mallett to get the hype going even more, just because of Locker's struggles. He can be sitting at the top of the, many teams' draft boards by the end of this week, as far as the quarterback position goes. He comes out, he leads his team to victory, big upset against Alabama, passes for, 300 yards, no turnovers, three touchdowns, winning the game. Just can you I can imagine already where that's going to take him, where how high the level can go of, just where people will see him. So it's a big game for him, and I think he probably knows that, and hopefully he can handle the pressure and keep the ball in the hands of his own receivers.
Now, Michael, I'll just jump over to you. What did you think about Arkansas last week not being able to finish that game? Does that worry you a little bit? I mean, they were up by what, 14 or 17 points, and Georgia came right back in that game. Does that worry you at all about the
Yeah,
Hogs?
their defense isn't good. I mean, they gave up almost 400 yards to Georgia without AJ Green. They're not good on defense. And I think people confuse they're better than they were last year with good. Just because you're better, if you're horrible and then you get better, you can still be a better form of horrible. And that's what they are. They're not good on defense. They don't stop anybody. They make mistakes all the time, and they're lazy. And I'm just not impressed with this defense. They're not going to force Alabama into three and outs, and that's how they win this. That's the only way they can win this football game. And once Alabama gets in, starts giving them body blows in the middle of the third quarter, I don't think that this Arkansas defense gets up off the mat.
All right. We'll stick with you here, Michael. What's the deal with this Jeremiah Masoli experiment at Ole Miss? How's that going for him so far?
They're 1-2, so it's not going very well.
Oh, okay.
But
Guess
they, I
that
mean,
explains it right there.
it's not Mazzoli's fault, I don't believe. They brought in a guy they thought was a ringer. He's pretty damn good football player, but the problem is, you bring him in, you still don't have a defense. You don't have a playmaker. You lost Dexter McCluster. He's gone. Shea Hodge is gone. You don't have the guys that you had before that would make plays for you. And he can't do it all by himself. He was good at Oregon because he had Blount, LaMichael James. He had guys who could make plays, the tight end Dixon. Now he's got, what is he supposed to do? The guy's not Houdini. He can't just make plays out of thin air and with no players, and he definitely can't play defense for him too, because they can't stop anybody.
All right. What do you have to add to that, John?
I agree. I'm just thoroughly unimpressed with the defense of Ole Miss, and that's the issue. He's not played great, but he's played well enough for his team to win, Masoli, that is. It's just he isn't surrounded by enough good talent. I really, in the beginning of the season, I had some not high hopes, but I felt that Ole Miss could be better than some thought. I thought maybe they can win a game here or there, surprise a few people, but the defense just fell flat on their face. They looked terrible. And it again, I agree with Michael. It's not Masoli's fault. He's played all right, and it takes time to adjust to the new system. I think he's played well in that.
All right. And that pretty much explains everything. You guys did a great job there. Jumping down to the Sun Belt Conference, just a quick update on Dwight Dasher. His appeal, he lost his appeal today, so he will have to sit out the whole four games for Middle Tennessee State. Right. Now, we'll stick with the SBC here, Michael. Florida International looked pretty good against Texas A&M last week. Does that continue when they head to Maryland this week, or is it just that Texas A&M isn't that good of a team this year?
I think Texas A&M still has to get in sync. Anytime you go through your surgery, you're always going to be a little out of whack. I think Florida International benefited from them being out of sync. I think when they go up to Maryland, it's going to be an odd game. Maryland's really good early, and then they struggle down the stretch as Ralph Regan starts calling his own play, or James Franklin starts calling his own plays and going off script. So I think Maryland jumps out early, and then I think Florida National may battle back. But Maryland, this is a game Maryland's got to win. I mean, if they lose this game, they should be embarrassed. And no disrespect to Florida International, but this is they should. They're I don't believe that they're going to win this game.
All right. And we'll go over to the WAC now. Boise State, they host the Oregon State Beavers on Saturday night. We'll go with you, John. If Oregon State running game is going full force, do they have a chance to win this game?
They have a chance to win this game no matter what, but I think Ryan Katz needs to show up and make plays. He can't turn the ball over. He can't be indecisive. He needs to grow up and play beyond his years. And the running game can carry them so far, but Boise State is going to put points on the board. Kellen Moore is going to heave the ball downfield, and they're going to put up points. And to keep up with them, they're going to have to rely on Katz's arm. He's going to need to make some plays.
So, I was just thinking as far as, just run the ball, keep the Boise State offense off the field, wear their defense down so you can possibly beat them late. Is that a
I mean that's going to be their game plan, but
right?
they still have to. That's not going to be enough to win the game. They need to make plays in the passing game, and Katz, it's going to be in his hands to do that. But yeah, you're right. Going into the game, that is their game plan. That is how they win the game. But I'm not sure it's enough for them to. That's not all they need to do to pull out the victory.
All right, and we'll stick with you here, John. Nevada, they put on a show last week against Cal. Colin Kaepernick looked pretty damn good. They head to BYU on Saturday. How does the pistol work against BYU on Saturday?
It's gonna work like it's worked the last couple of years with Kaepernick at the helm. He's gonna make plays. I was impressed watching him Friday night, how well he threw the ball. Trying to evaluate him for the NFL draft, just taking a look. He does have that elongated motion, but he has a strong arm. He's surprisingly accurate, and he can run the ball. And I think going in up against BYU, the same thing's gonna happen. He's gonna run the ball. That offense is gonna, it's gonna put up a ton of points, and BYU just has to hope they can keep up.
Oh, we'll just do a quick prospect breakdown with you, John, for Colin Kaepernick. I mean, we've got a scouting report up on him on NFLMocks.com, but do you see him as a quarterback in the NFL, or is he a wide receiver? Where do you see him fitting in?
I just did a little article like last weekend about him watching that game Friday night. He's just a playmaker in the open field. He can't be a running back. He runs too upright. I don't know. He doesn't have the build of a running back.
Well,
However,
besides Brandon Jacobs, I've never seen a 6'6" running back either.
He runs too upright to do that. But I mean, he does take a beating in that offense. So it's not like durability is really the question. I don't know if he's a wide receiver. He just When he runs and moves, yes, he gets downfield, he makes plays, but he looks a little stiff, and maybe that's just the way he runs, but I don't know if he's going to be able to get in and out of breaks. Now, talking about what I just said, I think his position, originally I thought he'd have to switch, but he showed me a little bit with his arm strength and his ability to stay accurate and find open receivers. I think he has a shot. I think he's going to be a late round pick if he goes as a quarterback, but maybe a developmental type. I think quarterback is his position, maybe receiver. He could be a guy that, is your third string quarterback, but gets in on some wildcat plays. Maybe someone can look for him in that type of situation.
All right. Excellent breakdown of the quarterback for Nevada, Colin Kaepernick. John, thank you very much. Now we'll jump on over to the pregame warm-up pick'em segment. First game this week is Stanford at Notre Dame. Michael, who do you like in this game and why?
Stanford. They're a better football team. They've got a better coach, I believe, and they've got better players.
All right. And John, who do you like?
Stanford. Basically the same reasons. I just don't think the Notre Dame defense is going to be able to stop Luck.
And I will also go with the Stanford Cardinal in the first game there. Now we go to South Carolina at Auburn. John, who do you like in this game?
I went back and forth maybe six, seven times on this game. I'm gonna go with Auburn. I think they have enough leftover after that big win against Clemson. I think they're riding high. I think Cam Newton's gonna move the ball well. Mike Dyer's gonna show up, run the ball. McCaleb's gonna break some big runs. I think the big game breaker that we're gonna see, it's gonna be a nice matchup. But Darvin Adams on the outside, the receiver, he's looked very impressive this year. I think it's gonna be a very interesting matchup between him and Gilmore and Culver, the two corners for South Carolina. Although I am very high in South Carolina, I am going to go with Auburn in this game.
All right, Michael, what about you?
I'm taking South Carolina. I like the Gamecocks. I like the fact that Lattimore can be a workhorse, and Steve Spurrier thinks he's got something special in Columbia.
That's exactly why I'm picking him, too. I think Lattimore is going to have a huge game. I'm going with the South Carolina Gamecocks. We'll start with you here, Michael. West Virginia at LSU. Who do you like in this game?
Bayou Bengals all the way. I think the defense is going to show up. I think they get some big plays on special teams. And I just think this moment's too big for West Virginia and their young quarterback.
All right. And, John, what about you?
I'm going with the upset. I'm going with West Virginia here. I think Geno Smith may have a few hiccups in the game, but I don't think the LSU offense can put up enough points to put this game away. And in the end, I think West Virginia pulls out the victory.
All right. And I'm going to go with the LSU Tigers as well. I love their defense this year. If the other team isn't scoring, you have a good shot to win every game. So I'm going with LSU. We'll go down to Oregon State at Boise State. Michael, who do you like in this game?
Boise State, 17-point favorite. I mean, I can't pick against them. This is the kind of game they win, and Oregon State's good, but they don't have any passing game. They're pretty one-dimensional, and when you're one-dimensional against a team with a pretty quality defense, you get shut down. So I got to go with the Broncos.
What if we were picking against a spread? Would you pick them as a 17-point favorite?
Why not? I mean, they know they have to score points, and they know that they need to score. I think I don't think they're 17 points better than Oregon State, but I also think that they're going to do some stuff to try and, if they get a lead, they're going to try and put this game away, put it to bed. I don't think they're just going to try and win the way they did, the way they scrapped in other games. I think if they get up, they're going to try and pull out all the stops, trick plays, everything, to try and put some points up on the board.
And John, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, I'm going with Boise State too. I think, you know, they shut down the Virginia Tech running game. They're going to shut down the Oregon State running game, or at least they're going to try. And Katz has not shown me that he can make the plays. And I'm sure he hasn't shown the Boise State coaching staff. So they're going to load the box up and try to shut down Jaquizz Rodgers.
Now, although Oregon State coach Riley, he did paint the practice field turf blue to get them ready for this game, I am going to go with Boise State as well. I think that he might have just been trying to get in their heads. I'm not sure what he was doing, but we'll see if that works. But I'm going with Boise State also.
What did they say that cost? Like $8,000 to paint that field blue?
Somebody,
that's crazy.
Somebody donated it to him, I think. But, yeah, that was – hey, if it works, it's worth every penny of it, in my opinion. We'll go down to the final game of the pregame warm-up pick 'em here. Alabama at Arkansas. John, who do you like in this game?
Alabama, they're just too strong on both sides of the ball. Arkansas doesn't have the defense to stick with them.
All right. And Michael, I think I know where you're going, but why don't you tell us anyway?
Alabama all the way. I mean, the Tide is just they're too crisp. And I think a lot of folks are confusing me liking Alabama or being really high on them with saying, well, they only blew out Duke. Duke's not good. And I don't care how many points they scored against Duke. What I'm looking for in their last few games is how crisp they play. No penalties, no mistakes, not a lot of blown coverages. All things that they kind of cleared up heading into this football game that would have killed them. But now it seems like they've got a lot of that stuff cleared up. They're all on the same page.
Right. I'm going to go with the upset here. I'm taking the Hogs at home. I think Mallett's going to have the game of his life, showcase game, and he's going to lead them to victory. I'm picking the Hogs. Right, and that finishes up the pregame warm-up pick 'em. We'll head on down to the world-famous prospect quickfire. First prospect this week is Nebraska defensive tackle Jared Crick. John, tell me a little bit about him.
Jared Crick's a nice defensive line prospect. He's a guy that gets in the backfield. He creates pressure. He knows how to force his way back there. He's a little undersized for a defensive tackle in the NFL right now. I mean, he has a big frame. He's 6'6", but he only weighs about 285. If he wants to play D-tackle, he's going to have to bulk up a little bit in the NFL. I think he fits perfectly as a 3-4 defensive end. He can get off the ball. He could stuff the run. I think that's the perfect fit for him. And with the NFL moving to a lot of teams moving to the 3-4, you're going to see him, a lot of teams taking a look at him come April.
Michael, what do you have to add about Jared Crick?
No, I was actually going to definitely go with the 3-4, the 3-4 defensive end. He's kind of a guy that could play that 5 technique. He looks really good for that form. He's got nice body size, nice long arms to play that. He'd be really good at that position.
All right. Second prospect this week is Ryan Mallett, quarterback out of Arkansas. Michael, what do you like and dislike about him?
I mean, he's obviously got all the tools in terms of physical abilities. A big kid. He throws a hard fastball. He's very accurate. He makes pretty good decisions. Normally, at least, he makes pretty good decisions. 30-7 TD to INT ratio a season ago proves that. Kind of a slow release. He's not very mobile, but I mean, when you're building a team, this is the kind of kid you look for because he's got all the physical capabilities that you need, and appears to have most of the mental stuff that you asked for too.
All right, John, what do you have to add?
Yeah, he is a big guy, big arm, big size. He's more mobile than a lot of people think. Going back to his freshman year at Michigan, I just remember seeing he was just bowling people over. He can move a little bit. He's not Jake Locker by any stretch of the imagination, but he can run a little bit. The question with him is going to be his footwork. And Michael talked about it. Just the big thing you want to look at is he throws the ball so much in this offense that every time he's out there, he's getting reps. He's getting nice reads on the defense. I think that's good, solid experience for him moving forward to the NFL. I think that's one thing that NFL scouts are going to look at, and they're going to like that. There's enough sample to see what kind of decisions he does make and what he's good at and what he's not at. So they're going to get a good read on Ryan Mallett.
All right, all right. Third prospect this week is Akeem Ayers from UCLA. He's a linebacker. John, what can you tell us about him?
I love this guy. I think he's going to be a great player in the NFL. He has really good size at 6'4", 255, good speed. He's all over the field. You watch any UCLA game, he's going to be in on almost every tackle. He's just a ball hawk. He knows where to go. He's strong. He's good against the run. He's good in coverage. He can bring pressure. I really like Hakeem Ayers.
Where do you see him fitting in? What type of defense? Really, any
I think
defense?
he, I,
Does
yeah, I think any I think maybe a 4-3 is ideal for him, but he can make the he could play the rush outside linebacker and a 3-4, but I think a 4-3 is probably the best fit for him.
All right. What are your thoughts on him, Michael?
See, I was actually thinking that with that size and the actual, like, he's got a tremendous size, his body in terms of the way the combo and the way that he fits. I was actually thinking that I would like to slot him inside to the inside of a 3-4. Because he's a guy that's got the ability to shed tacklers, to get guys off of him, to move, to get off blocks, and even though he does get up field and he does get attacking the quarterback, I'd like to see him as an inside guy paired with another nice size inside guy to make tackles and get off guards and attack the line of scrimmage.
Okay,
just to add on that a little bit, I think right now when you look at linebackers out there and the way teams are looking for 3-4 rush outside linebackers, I bring it up every talk about these prospects. I think teams are going to value that Ayers can play the 4-3 outside linebacker because it just seems when you look out there isn't as many of those players out available anymore. Everyone's looking for that rush outside linebacker. So I think I agree he could fit inside, but I think his value is a little higher because you know what? Teams are going to look like, see, we need that position. There isn't that many, and he is elite. So let's get him and plug him in there.
Now, John, you said teams are going to value that as a 4-3 outside linebacker. How much are they going to value that? Is that going to be something they trade up for? Are they going to overvalue him? Maybe he's a top 15
I
pick.
Mean,
or
you,
where
you got you got you got to look where the draft order is and who has needs. You got to see how this season goes through. But he could be a guy a team moves up for if they feel that that's the one piece that they need to make their defense where it needs to be to, make that next step maybe into the playoffs or even further. Someone could move up and get into Akeem Ayers. I could see that happening. I don't think he'll be overvalued. I don't think he's not going to be a guy like Aaron Curry. You're not going to be talking about him maybe being the number one overall pick, which a couple years ago I thought was crazy when they were talking about that. He was a good player, but same thing with Ayers. I mean, you're not going to talk about him that high, but he may surprise you how high he can go.
All right. So he's pretty universal. He can fit in a 3-4-4-3, outside, inside, you guys think?
That's what I love about this guy.
Okay. You too, Michael?
Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah.
All right. We'll start with you, Michael, with Michael Floyd, actually, a wide receiver out of Notre Dame. What do you dislike about him?
Man, he is one of the other guys in this crop of receivers when you look at between Julio Jones, A.J. Green, you've got the kid DeAndre Brown down there at Southern Miss, who's also good, not in that same class. Michael Floyd, to me, fits somewhere. He's sort of a hybrid of what Julio Jones does and A.J. Green. Somewhere in the middle, you'll find Michael Floyd. Big and physical, but he's also got the ability to go downfield and stretch the field a little bit more than you see Julio Jones do. I think he's a good football player. I wonder about his work ethic sometimes, watching him run routes. He is kind of lazy at times, but the kid's got all the physical tools to be an outstanding wide receiver.
And John, what do you think of Michael Floyd?
Yeah, he's in there. One guy that Michael did forget, is a Jonathan Baldwin, I think they're very similar, those two, in that they can get down the field. They know how to use their body. But some you may think about their overall speed. They're not going to burn by you, but for some reason they still get past you. They still get open down the field. A guy that I keep bringing up with these guys that somehow find a way to get open downfield that may not be burners is T.O. T.O. is not the fastest receiver out there, but yet for his entire career he's been stretching defenses. He's a deep play receiver, and I think these guys kind of, I'm not saying they're T.O. to a T, but that they're kind of in that mold where they're big physical receivers that will surprise you and outrun you.
I like that comparison a lot. Kind of the same body type too.
Yep. This receiver class is monstrous. But also when you look at it, the cornerbacks are also have very good size in this draft coming up. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out for the next couple of years.
Right. And we'll start with you, John, here. Adrian Claiborne out of Iowa, the defensive end. He's all world.
He's you know what? I'm not as high as everyone else is. You can call me crazy. I think last week he struggled against the double team. He wasn't able to handle being chipped all the time. He got chipped a couple times. There was a couple times where he was left one-on-one too. He's a good player. He's gonna create pressure. He's gonna be a good NFL player, I think. But I think last week to me kind of dropped his stock a little bit. He got frustrated. I think he had a personal foul where he had a late hit because he just wasn't getting through the double teams. And even as a rookie in the NFL, he's gonna get double teamed if he's supposedly this great of a pass rusher. They're gonna double team him, and if he can't get through it, he's gonna disappear and he's gonna end up getting the bust label because he can't create pressure, because that's what he's going to get drafted for, even though he is very good against the run. But he's going to get picked for his pass rush ability. And I just think, to me, his stock took a little hit last week when he wasn't able to get through those double teams and the chips and the tight ends. And to be honest with you, I didn't see as much as I expected. I think he was left one-on-one more than I expected.
All right. Michael, where do you see him fitting in this year? 3-4, 4-3? Does it matter?
He's physically, he's probably capable of playing a defensive end in a 3-4, but you don't draft a guy this talented to plug him in and be a two-gap long stick. A team that picks Adrian Claiborne, you're drafting in the first round, probably in the top 15, top 20 pick. You draft a guy like this to play your 4-3 defensive end, to be your Julius Peppers, to be your Dwight Freeney, to be your Jared Allen. And like as John mentioned, I don't know that he's fully capable of being that. But let's keep in mind, this guy's far from Vernon Golston. He's not undersized. He's not some workout warrior. He's a guy that produces on the field. His problem is he's kind of somewhere in between all this. And he doesn't have the array of moves that we've talked about with Greg Romeus. He doesn't have all those moves developed yet. And he's going to be a guy that's going to take some time to learn some things and learn how to play big-time football. And I don't know if you want to take a risk on a guy that you're going to have to teach these things that early unless he shows some aptitude for improvement during this season.
I mean, what took him?
I think one player – sorry, just one thing I want to mention is kind of like a couple years ago, Jamal Anderson from that was from Arkansas, was selected by the Falcons. They expected him to be this monster pass rusher, and he never developed. He's a good player. He's good against the run. I think this is something Claiborne, he's good against the run. He's a good player. But if he doesn't get double-digit sacks, every fan and everyone's going to – they're going to eat him up. And that's – I don't see that out of him. I don't see 10 sacks a year out of him.
Exactly.
I see maybe 6 or 7. He's going to be a good NFL player. But you take him in the top 10, you want 10 sacks or more. That's it. And if you don't get that, you're going to be disappointed.
Now, if he adds a few pounds, do you see him as a possibility as creating pressure up the middle, like as a defensive tackle, Michael? I mean, what do you?
I think that's something that you could see happen on passing downs. But if you're the problem is, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, the problem is when you get a guy of this ilk, of this talent, of this ability, and of this much hype, you can't draft him that high to put him at a 3 technique. You've got to put this kid, you've got to put him at a highlight position, and that's the defensive end spot. Same reason you can't draft him this high and then put him at a 3-4 defensive end. So what with him, he's the kind of guy like maybe like a I believe Jason Pierre-Paul, I've seen it, or Justin Tuck, that the Giants, you can slide him to a 3 technique on third down if you do that to get more pass rushers in the game. But I don't think that you slide him, I don't think you put him at that 3 technique spot on an every down basis.
All right. I think the one thing is right now he's about 280 maybe. That's not very big. He's only and I say only as, I sit here at 5'7", but he's only 6'3". I mean, he's not big. He puts on that extra weight to move inside. He can lose his speed. He can lose his quickness off the ball, and you don't want that either. But I do agree, like, if you're going to move him inside, it would be that Justin Tuck role to get four other ridiculous pass rushers on the field.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, perfect. Well, that wraps up the pregame warm-up, prospect quickfire. And actually, that wraps up the podcast for this week, too. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. And stay tuned next week and check the website all week as well. And I thank you so much.